Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 63. Can you believe it? I'm recording it on Thursday, December 18th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Investing Ethics, an Oxymoron. I've been wanting to either write an article or record a podcast on investing ethics for a long time. I think the idea for the article first came into my head well over a year ago, and I've held back. I read how Amazon.com, if you look up a book, it has comments from customers, and I one time read all the comments on Robert Shiller's book, Irrational Exuberance, just to see what people said. I think it's the most important investing book ever published. And there was one guy, I think it was one of the early comments, and he was praising Shiller. You know, he said, this is great that this guy has done this in this, but I don't remember what phrase he used, but essentially what he said was, this is a brave act, given this dirty business, you know. And I thought about how I felt about that, because, you know, if there's anyone who has a right to think of the investing advice and the investing advice field, or the personal, financial planning field as a dirty business, I think it would be fair to say that Rob Bennett has a right. My story, I won't go into it all, but if you've listened to the other podcast, the basics that I happened to do some research into my own retirement plan back in the mid-90s and discovered that the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, which are the studies that we all use to plan our retirements, are analytically invalid, and that they therefore get the numbers wrong. They do not include an adjustment for the valuation level that applies on the date the retirement begins, and that's the most critical factor in determining what's safe in a retirement plan. And there are going to be millions of people that are going to suffer busted retirements as a result of that error in the event that stocks perform in the future anything at all as they've always performed in the past. And that was, I announced that, or I first discussed it on a Motley Fool discussion board back in May of 2002. It's been 6.5 years, and, you know, all kinds of things have happened. Now, things have happened, some very, very negative things have happened. You know, I've had people threaten to kill me. I've had people threaten to kill my family. I've had discussion boards that I build up burn to the ground. I've been banned from discussion boards where I had spent years posting. I have people follow me around. I have this goon squad that follows me around. If ever I post on a blog, the goons are there, or they make some disparaging, slanderous comment. And anywhere I go, they threaten the people who have the blogs, that if they allow me to post, they will be dealt with. I've had people put up porn sites. I've had, and link me to them so that people will think I'm associated with them. I've had people send out phony emails, thousands and thousands and thousands of phony emails under my name, with the hope of having Google ban my website for sending out spam. So on and on and on. I've had people, thousands of posts on the internet that give false descriptions of my personal financial circumstances, with the hope that people who are looking for my book, or looking to learn about what I believe about both saving and investing, will get inaccurate information. Smear posts on my smear reviews of my book published at Amazon.com, on and on and on. I've been accused of plagiarism, falsely accused of plagiarism. All because I reported the safe withdrawal rate accurately. This is my terrible crime that I reported accurately the numbers people need to use to build successful retirement plans. And on top of all that, you know, a lot of that is internet stuff, internet ugliness. But on top of all that, the people who should be more responsible, the people who, you know, big name experts, I've contacted a good number of big name experts, you know, to help us, to help our boards. You know, I'm trying to get the, open up the possibility of our boards, you know, honest posting on our boards, the retire early boards, the indexing boards. And I've had big name people like, you know, John Bogle sided with Mel Lindauer. Mel Lindauer was one of the leaders of the abusive posters. You know, Bill Bernstein, you know, he reported the safe withdrawal rate accurately in his book, but when he was posting at Vanguard Diehards and there were a bunch of goons surrounding him, he said, "Oh, I have no idea what the safe withdrawal rate is." You know, Scott Burns, he wrote three columns, you know, about our findings, which was wonderful. But then when the goons showed up at his discussion board, he banned me. I sent a note to Scott saying, "Look, you know, there's these goon posters. They follow me around. Would you please do something?" And he banned me. And he sent, you know, he sent in an email. He says, "You know, I appreciate that you've added a new layer of our understanding to this issue, but you know, your approach pointing out that these studies are an error is catastrophically unproductive. You know, we can't have that." And he wrote in another email that the reason that the media does not report our safe withdrawal rate findings is that, quote, "it is information most people don't want to hear." So if there's anyone who I think would be justified in having a negative view of the investing advice industry, whatever you want to call it, I think I would be justified. So there's a part of me that agrees with that comment, out of irrational exuberance. There's a part of me that says, yes, this is a dirty business and people need to be warned about it. And I do think that people need to be warned, they need to be told about it. They need to know that a lot of the information that's out there is flat out wrong and dangerous and irresponsible. So to a point, I very much agree with what the person said at the, you know, at the Amazon.com review or customer review of Irrational Exuberance. But I never have felt entirely comfortable with what that person said, because for all sorts of reasons, and I'm going to go through them here, but there's something about it that always struck me wrong. And I think now, the reason I'm going ahead with the podcast now is I think I have a better sense today of why that fellow, while well-intentioned, I certainly think his comment was well-intentioned, I think he's gotten it a little wrong. And I can't go through, you know, all the background of you know, why we've had this stock crash. Basically, we've had the stock crash because of the bull market of the 1990s. Bull markets are the worst thing that can happen for middle-class investors. There's never been a time when we've had a huge bull market and we have not suffered horrible, horrible, bone-crushing financial losses in the aftermath. And there's a reason why this happens. And I say, I can't go through all that. You'll have to listen to the other podcast. But a short way of describing it is to say that stock investing encourages emotional extremes. And when stock prices are going up, which is what they call a bull market, when stock prices go up enough to cover an increase of a real return each year of 6.5% real, that's real. That's the economic realities causing stock prices to go up. So that's not a problem at all. That's wonderful. That's how we all achieve financial freedom. When prices go up more than 6.5% real, you are dealing with phony increases. It's not real, not justified by the economic realities. What you're doing when you have these huge, huge increases in stock returns like we had in the late 1990s is you're borrowing from the future. You're borrowing from future returns. And if you borrow enough, you're going to cause there to be no returns, no positive return from stocks for many years to come. And when that happens, sooner or later, there's a price crash because people get fed up without having any positive return for so long. They sell their stocks. That causes a price crash. Price crash takes money out of the economy. I calculated the number recently. It's a rough calculation, but my rough calculation is that something in the neighborhood of $16 trillion has been taken out of the U.S. economy from the combination of all the stock losses we've seen from 2000 forward, including the recent crash, but not including only the recent crash, plus the amount we lost with the crash in housing prices, which was, you know, funded. You know, the housing crisis was caused by the overvaluation in stocks. So combining all of those, the loss today is somewhere in the neighborhood of $16 trillion. When you take $16 trillion out of the economy, you obviously are going to cause severe recession, if not a depression. So that's what we're experiencing today. So the pattern is, and this pattern repeats itself. It's repeated itself, I think, four times now in U.S. history, and it just repeats over and over. There's a cycle that lasts, I don't know, 25 years or so. And this pattern just keeps repeating. And then, of course, what happens is we have these times of insanely high prices where stock investing becomes a very dangerous thing to engage in. And then we have the price crash. And then everyone learns the lesson not to invest in stocks. And then stocks are a wonderful asset class, but few middle-class investors are able to participate because they've been wiped out in the crash. And what I worry is I focus on this emotional side. I don't focus on, I did not go to school to learn investing. I do not manage a multi-million dollar fund, you know, none of this sort of thing. I'm a journalist. I report. This is a big story. The passive investing stock crash of 2008 is a big story. It's changing the lives of all middle class workers, and it will for many, many years to come. And I think we need to write that story, and we need to tell that story, and we need to learn the lessons from that story so that we never do something like this again. That's the goal of my writing and my podcast, to teach so that we never, ever, ever do something like this again to ourselves. And what I worry is when I read that fellow's comment, and this was a long time back, this was several years back, what I worry is that while a case can be made that he's right, there's a dirty side to the investing advice business. That's a true statement. There's a dirty side to it. The other side of the story is if we focus on that dirty side, I feel the phrase I always use on the boards is I say, we're at risk of becoming goons ourselves. In other words, you don't want to become too cynical. You certainly don't want to become angry or hate-filled or ungenerous or, you know, you don't want to go to the dark side, you know? I watch Star Wars with my younger boy, loves Star Wars, and we watch Star Wars over and over again. And that's what I think of when I hear that phrase, the dark side, you know, the power of the dark side. There's a power on the dark side. Same thing with Lord of the Rings. I have these comical images, but I think of myself as Frodo. You know, we're watching Lord of the Rings with my boys. We're reading it, and then after we finish the book, we get the movie. And, you know, Frodo, you know, he's got these big eyes, and he's this poor innocent. And you know, little hobbit, he doesn't want to take on Sauron. And Rob Bennett, you know, I always bring up, Petey Person referred to me as this puppy dog of a poster. In the days before I talked about investing, I was viewed as a puppy dog poster because I was all sweetness and light, and you know, everybody loved me. I was the most loved poster at the Motley Fool site for a good bit of time. And John Graney loved me, you know, my nemesis today. And John Graney would say, anybody that comes to this board, you know, read Rob's stuff. He's the best. He's the best. And, you know, talk about investing, though. And now, you know, I went from being the most loved to being the most hated. You know, and people, and they hate me, believe me. They're not kidding. Some are kidding. But no, some are not kidding. There's too many people that hate me for it to be kidding across the board. I know that there's reality there. So I worry. So I think of Frodo going up against Sauron. And you know, there's this scene where Gandalf, you know, Frodo sort of confides to Gandalf. He just says, Gandalf the wizard, he says, I wish the ring had never fallen into my possession. You know, I don't want this responsibility. And Gandalf says, well, that's how all of those who are given these responsibilities feel. No one wants this. That's not your choice. Your job is to make the best you can out of the circumstances dealt to you. And so, you know, I don't want to go to the dark side. And I worry that if I adopt that cynical view that the entire investing industry is dirty, I become a goon myself. I go to the dark side. I become cynical. And why is that wrong? It's wrong because what I've said before, I said, I am a journalist. I want to tell the story. The job is not to tell a sensational story. This is certainly a sensational story. It's the most, I think, you know, I'll tell you what I think. I think this is the biggest story in personal finance in my lifetime. You know, I think probably the biggest story in personal finance in my lifetime up till now was Eugene Fama's idea of the efficient market theory, which I believe his first study came out in the early 1960s. That was huge because that changed the history of investing. And I criticize the efficient market theory all the time, but it was a huge advance in our understanding. There are flaws. Eugene Fama was not God. He made mistakes. But he also added a great deal to our understanding of how stock investing works. And people were very, very excited about his findings in the 60s and 70s and 80s. And many are still excited today, but I hope that with this stock crash that that's starting to wear off. I think people are starting to question at this point. I hope so. But I think the Eugene Fama story, the efficient market theory, is the biggest story until now in my lifetime. And I think this is every bit as big, the great safe withdrawal rate debate, the discovery of valuation-informed indexing and the discovery of rational investing. The discovery of the stock return predictor and the scenario surfer and the retirement risk evaluator, soon to come the reality checker, the buy and hold reality checker, a calculator that John Russell and I are hoping to get out sometime early in 2009. I think this stuff is huge. And you know, I hope that that's not taken as me bragging. It's a community effort. It's not Rob Bennett. You know, I'm the guy that chronicles it. I'm the guy that develops the calculator with John. And I write the articles and record the podcast, all this sort of thing. But we've had hundreds of people. I like to mention them all. I don't know if I'm getting off topic, but Ben Solar was a huge help. El Supremo was a huge help. John Walter Russell's beyond description, the amount of help he's given. He's the kindest, most intelligent person I've ever encountered on a discussion board. Just amazing, an amazing human being. Petey Person had many good insights. Wanderer, many good insights. Rad Doctor, radiology doctor, fantastic research that you know helped us at key moments. John D. Craig, fantastic stand-up guy. Microlepsis, amazing knowledge base. Fool Me Once was a star for a long time. Who was that guy? 90s, no, I can't remember it. 90s, he had a funny screen name. 90s kind of guy. I don't have it right, but he had a lot of good posts. There are so many. Stumble Jumper was great. Stubble Jumper, he was great. Lots and you know, there are hundreds of people. I named some of the really big ones, but I probably forgot a few too. But you know, it warms my heart to think of how many people took time out of their day with no, not a dime of compensation, at risk of being smeared every which way from here to next week, and they put their necks on the line and they helped us out. and we developed, you know, these insights. And that's the good side, you see. And so if you start saying this is, there is this dirty side, of course, the smear campaigns and the deception post and the intimidation post and the word games. You know, all that's a drag. But you become cynical and you'll focus on the negative. You'll focus on the ugly stuff. And focus on the ugly stuff. The dark side sucks you in. And you become the dark side. And this is just how passive investing works. See, passive investing is the enemy in my eyes. Not John Bogle. John Bogle is wonderful. John Bogle is my hero. John Bogle is one of the three godfathers of the rational investing model. But John Bogle's advocacy of passive investing, the idea that you don't need to change your stock allocation when prices go to insane levels, that is a negative. And the true ugliness of passive investing isn't, people think, they listen to my, you know, what I have to say, and they think what Rob is saying is that passive investing is dangerous because it causes you to overinvest in stocks when stocks are dangerous. And certainly that's half of my message. Certainly that's a big, important message. But that's only half. The other half is that in that extreme emotionalism that causes you to overinvest in stocks when stocks are dangerous also causes you to underinvest in stocks when stocks are safe. It works two ways. Passive investing always makes you do the wrong thing. Being super emotional about your investing strategies is always a bad idea. Not only in bull markets, it's wrong in bear markets. And we've now suffered the bull market part. That's where you suffer these huge losses that, you know, will take some people decades to make up. But now we're heading, you know, I don't know, it could be 5 years from now, but somewhere in the not too distant future, we're heading into the stage where the price we will be paying is not that we will be having crushing losses, it's that we will have suffered so many crushing losses. I think one more stock crash and we'll be there. Another 50% loss and everyone will be bailing. Even, you know, the diehards, the Vanguard diehards will be bailing. And when the Vanguard diehards bail, everyone bails. And that's when stocks will be our, you know, the ticket to financial freedom. And we'll miss out. Because once again, it's giving into the dark side. Passive investing sucks you in, makes you super emotional on the upside, and then the crushing blow makes you super emotional on the downside. So what I fear and what I have feared ever since I've thought of writing about this subject or speaking about it is I don't want to play into that. So if I jump on what that guy said and tell you that it's a dirty business, everybody in investing, they're creeps, they're thugs, they're meanies, you know. If I do that, what I'm doing is I'm playing right into that passive investing game. You see, it's just like the ring in Lord of the Rings. And that ring tempts you. It corrupts you because it has such power. And you want to put it on. And, you know, Boromir, you know, wants to take the ring from Frodo because he wants to win a battle. He wants it for good purposes. But Gandalf says no. He says you can't take that ring because it will corrupt you. Even Gandalf at one point, you know, Frodo says to Gandalf, why can't you take it? You know, you're a lot smarter than me. You're a lot more powerful than me. You take the ring. And Gandalf says, no. He says, look, I'm tempted. I'd love to take the ring so I could defeat Sauron. But that ring will corrupt me, and I will be a monster with my powers. And that ring, I will be a monster. The ring was meant to be carried by you, Frodo. And I think that this ring was meant to be carried by me, Rob Bennett. I think I'm Frodo. And, you know, didn't choose it. Didn't want to be Frodo. No way, no how. It fell into my hands. I had to defend my discussion board. And through circumstances, I was chosen to carry this ring. To go up against Sauron. Sauron is gooniness. The gooniness in the human soul. That's Sauron. The eye. The eye, the fiery eye. And, you know, I'm somehow positioned properly to do it because I'm not in the business. So I can tell the truth about stock investing, and I don't have to worry about losing customers because I don't have any customers. I don't have any customers to lose. And as much as I want to not tell the truth, and there have been times when I very, very, very much didn't want to tell the truth, my entire writing business is an internet business, and it's a community business. The first thing I did was build a community. And so I can't operate without a community to talk things over with. And so I have no choice but to post honestly. If I post dishonestly, I've betrayed my community. It can't work. It's over. So I've never had a choice. I've never had a choice, any more than Frodo had a choice. I've had temptations, but I've never had a choice. Anyway, enough of the Frodo riff. But I have always felt I don't want to go to the dark side. But it's hard. The temptation is to damn these people. And that's not the answer. Because if we do that, in other words, if I did that, my book ends up being a doom and gloom book. You read Stocks for the Long Run. You read Common Sense on Mutual Funds. You read Random Walk Down Wall Street. That hyped you up. Those books caused you to overinvest in stocks, caused you to lose a bundle. And now you read the gloom and doom version of the story, and that causes you to bail out of stocks and miss the greatest opportunity of your lifetime to make the money back. So what have I done then? Maybe it sells, maybe not. But it's not what I set out to do. So I'm not gonna go there if I can avoid it. I'm not gonna go there. So I'm not going to damn them. But I need a case. I can't be dishonest. If I give up honesty, this is where I've always drawn the line. The goons, sometimes you get the feeling they're floating ideas. They'd like to patch things up because, they know obviously that they've caused, horrible financial losses to people. And sometimes you get the feeling they want to patch it up, but they put these little feelers out. But the feelers are always, if Rob will agree to post dishonestly on safe withdrawal rates, we can let him back. But I can't, because that's deceptive posting is the whole problem. I agree to post deceptively, and the community dies. So where I draw the line is I won't post deceptively, but I will respond in love. I have a podcast on this theme. Love is the answer. So that's always the answer. When I'm debating what to do, you look into your heart and say, what is the loving thing? And the loving thing is not to damn these people. The loving thing is to try to understand, not just to report the facts and say, we discovered errors in the safe withdrawal rate studies, the old school safe withdrawal rate studies in 2002, and those studies haven't been corrected as of December 2008. That's a fact, but it's not the only fact. We have to understand why that's a fact. And understanding it isn't damning the people, because the people are flawed, but the people are good. Both things are true. Both things are true. The people are dumb and the people are smart. Both things are true. Passive investing had huge promise and huge potential, but it's caused, huge financial devastation. Both things are true. And if we want to tell the true story, we've got to tell both sides. So my strategy, my take on things is always to be hard as nails on the, on the mathematical calculation. You've got to tell the mathematical calculation accurately. But to be soft as a cuddly puppy dog on everything else, with the hope that somewhere down the road, we're going to get some people of responsibility to acknowledge that the old retirement studies are wrong, they need to be corrected, and that opens up everything. Once you correct the old retirement studies, you're acknowledging that passive investing has failed, because anything that would any model that would cause retirement numbers to be wrong is obviously a failed model. And once we've acknowledged that passive investing is failed, all of the knowledge that all sorts of, you know, thousands of wonderful people, all the work they've been doing for 30 years now, learning about the realities of investing, all of the realities that are hushed up today become public information. Once the only thing holding it back is this wall, this 10-foot thick wall of passive investing. We can't acknowledge passive investing is wrong. We can't abandon that. That's everything. We got to hang on to that. I want to break down that wall. But what I'm saying is you don't break it down with a bulldozer. You break it down with love. As paradoxical as that may sound, it's like judo. You know, a frontal attack isn't going to do the job. Love disarms them. Love disarms them. And they are our friends. All of the people on the other side are our friends. They're good people and they're smart people, and we want them contributing. We want them helping us to learn. What I want to do is take Bogle's ideas and take them to the next stage. I don't want to, you know, I come not to bury John Bogle. I come to praise him. My goal is to take John Bogle's ideas and make them, you know, make the changes necessary to make these ideas practical and realistic so that they will work in the real world. So anyway, I want to go through both the reasons why one might conclude that investing ethics is an oxymoron, and then I want to go through 10 reasons why I've rejected that belief. And I'll go quickly through the reasons why, in an objective sense, it appears to be financial fraud that we've witnessed for 7 years now. And I don't need to spend much time on it because I've discussed this stuff in detail in earlier podcasts. Number one, that the retirement studies got the numbers wrong. You know, in any field of endeavor, you know, there's going to be matters of opinion where reasonable people can have differences of opinion. The retirement studies don't count valuations at all. It's not that they don't count valuations sufficiently. They just don't count it at all. They give the same safe withdrawal rate at times of low valuations, medium valuations, and high valuations. It can't be so. Bill Bernstein says, valuations affect long-term returns as a matter of, quote, mathematical certainty. So the old-school safe withdrawal rate studies are in defiance of a mathematical certainty. It's not Rob Bennett's opinion that these studies are wrong. It's an objective, demonstrable fact. The historical data is public information. Anyone can check it out. Anyone can see that what Bill Bernstein says is right, that valuations affect long-term returns. So obviously, the safe withdrawal rate cannot be the same number at times of insanely high valuations as it is at times of moderate valuations or low valuations. So that's why I say, in an objective sense, we have a case of financial fraud on our hands. Number two, I want to go through these quickly. I don't want to spend a lot of time, but discussion boards don't enforce their own posting rules. You know, I was just shocked and amazed and stunned when Motley Fool banned me from their website, knowing that I had never once put forward a post that in any way, shape, or form was abusive. Never. There's no community member in our community who has spoken out more strongly in opposition to abusive posting. And yet they did, because they were not willing to remove John Graney, who was the abusive poster, trying to block the community's discussions of these issues. And the same thing happened at Morningstar, except Mel Lindauer played the John Graney role. And the same thing happened at Early Retirement Forum. There it was Cute Fuzzy Bunny playing the John Graney role. The same thing happened at NoFeeBoards.com, and it was Attalos playing the John Graney role. These should be responsible people, the owners of the boards. The owners of the boards aren't, you know, internet goons. They wrote the rules. They wrote the rules for a reason. Why don't they enforce them? They had community members asking that they enforce them. Why don't they do it? Again, that appears to be fraud. Motley Fool should have, you know, what I would have liked to have seen them done is, you know, they could have written articles about what we found. And I offered. I said I would meet with them at any time, any place, to describe all the background of our findings. And that, you know, they do newsletters. They publish newsletters. They could have published a newsletter on valuation-informed indexing. It's a great new investing approach. And I, you know, I would have written articles for it. I would have helped them in any way, any possible way. And our community would have just, you know, we had a community of thousands of people. Think of what we could have produced. Think of what they could do at Morningstar. Think of what they could do at Bogleheads.org. Point three, you know, on the black side of all this, the experts don't respond to questions or become angry when asked. You know, I mentioned Scott Burns did respond to questions, and he was wonderful. He was wonderful, but he did become very testy. You know, when he made that comment about my approach is catastrophically unproductive, that was a testy moment, and that indicates, you know, it's a bad indication because it indicates they have something to hide. They know. The experts, I don't think the experts know, whether they know enough to make this fraud or not is an impossible question to answer. You'd have to see into their minds. But they know that valuations is the weak point of the passive investing model. That's clear can be. As soon as the valuation question comes up, they start using fuzzy language. They start running for the exits. They start hemming and hawing. They know. You know, Bill Bernstein, he calculated the safe withdrawal rate in his book. And it's all wonderful. He's got a chapter in there. It's the best chapter I've ever read on the rational investing approach. Chapter 2. But then when it comes time to report the result to say, you know, I finished the calculation, the safe withdrawal rate is 2%, not 4%, he changes it and says the safe withdrawal rate could be as low as 2%. In other words, instead of saying what it is, it's a mathematical calculation. The result of a mathematical calculation is something. He flips it to could be. So he's clearly aware. He's aware that to say it is 2% is to drop a nuclear bomb. He knows this. Now, he may not know all the implications. I don't think he does. I think he turns his eyes from it. I don't think he wants to know the implications. But there's a part of him, he's just too intelligent, there's a part of him that knows there's something wrong with this passive investing model not adjusting for valuations. So that's, and please, don't think I'm picking on Scott or Bill. This is not one person or two people or three people. This is across the board. I've communicated with many people. Always the same general pattern. Always. And these are high integrity people. You know, Scott Burns ain't the worst. He's one of the best. Bill Bernstein's one of the best. Everyone I've ever interacted with are among the best. I don't think there's ever been a time I've communicated with someone who I thought was, you know, of questionable ethics. I don't think ever, you know. I just am not interested in dealing with such people. That's probably the biggest reason. You know, I'm interested in learning from the best. And so those are the ones I ask my questions to. So please don't ever take it the wrong way when I say something like that. I have to report the realities, but please don't make that mistake. These are good people, smart people too. Four, the news media fails to report developments. You know, if you were prone to conspiracy theories, this is the ultimate conspiracy theory. We can't get the news media to report about this. What was it? I tell the story from time to time. I once wrote to USA Today about the retirement risk evaluator. If anything was ever made for the cover story on USA Today, you know, it's a business-oriented publication. They love primary colors. You know, they love to have these color charts. And the retirement risk evaluator has, you know, it's the only calculator on the internet that gives accurate information for retirement planning. It's the only one I know of. And the results come up. We use these primary colors to tell you, you know, dangerous retirements in red and, you know, sort of dangerous in yellow and safe is in green, you know. And it's tailor-made for USA Today. Pitched right to their audience, you know, business people trying to put together retirements. It's all new, you know, hasn't been done anywhere else. Unique information, but information that's been checked out, you know, by thousands of people on discussion boards and checked out by some big name experts like Bill Bernstein and Scott Burns and Michael Kitsis and, you know, on and on. TaylorMade. And what does the guy from USA Today say? Not for us. Not for us. That's what the email back I got said. Not for us. Again, not it ain't just USA Today doing this. It ain't just USA Today. But if you were prone to conspiracy theories, you know, you would, this is one, I said it. You think of some of the investing advice that's been given, and it horrifies you. I remember, and again, I'm sorry, I have to keep bringing up Scott Burns' name, but I know about him because he's somebody I follow, because I like him. But there was a guy who asked a question, you know, and this is before the price crash, and he was saying, this doesn't make sense to me, this idea that valuations don't matter. Should I be lowering my stock allocation? Valuations are so high. And Scott's like, oh, no, you know, and just all the standard marketing slogans, you know, buy and hold, stay the course, stocks for the long run. Passive investing. Don't have to change your allocation. Timing doesn't work. Timing doesn't work. Don't forget, timing doesn't work. You know, you think of how this guy was hurt. This guy was, if he followed the advice he was given, and that advice is 90% of the people giving investing advice are giving that advice. Money Magazine, Wall Street Journal. I had people when I had a big corporate job, and I had people coming in. They were giving us advice on what to do with our 401k money, and they were giving that advice. Buy and hold. Timing doesn't work. You know, is that fraud? They're talking about this guy. There's this, you know, hedge fund guy, and they're making a big deal out of it. And it may be a big deal. I mentioned in an earlier podcast, I don't read the details because it's not of interest to me. And the reason it's not of interest is if the guy did wrong stuff, fine. Throw the book at him. You know, I don't care. But again, it strikes me as I don't want our emotional energy to be used up in anger. And some people are angry at this guy. There's no ifs, ands, buts about it. And I'm a little uneasy with it because who lost us more money, this guy with the hedge fund or the people promoting passive investing? You know, passive investing, we're looking at a $16 trillion loss. It's a lot more than that guy lost in the hedge fund. You know, only a relatively small number of people were in that hedge fund. Virtually every middle-class investor in the United States has heard timing doesn't work. You know, so is that financial fraud? The obvious contradictions in advice. You know, I have if you want to hear about this, listen to my recent podcast, Bogle and Valuations, and I talk about how John Bogle, smart as smart can be, makes statements that contradict each other. You can't figure out what he really believes. And, you know, that's troubling. In different circumstances, that would be a sign of fraud, would it not? Now, I want to flip, and I want to make 10 arguments for why it's not fraud, because I don't believe it is. One, this might be the biggest one, but this one hits me really big. And I pointed this out it was one of the first articles I put to my site back in 2005. Number one, the people who give this advice, they follow it. Okay? John Graney is the gooniest goon, you know, I've ever known. And John Graney follows the safe withdrawal rate study that he put out. He invests according to it. He's got his money on the line. So that's a funny kind of fraud, isn't it? He knows it doesn't stand up to reasoned scrutiny. If he thought that he could make a reasonable case for his study, he obviously would do that. You know, he wouldn't be threatening to kill me. He would just say, here's the argument. You know, here's the methodology I used, and here's why I did it, and, you know, here are my answers to your questions, Rob, and I hope, you know, people, I'm glad to have you here asking questions. That's good. And people can hear your side and my side, and they can decide what to do. That's not the way he responded. So that's evidence of fraud, of a lack of ethics. But the fact that he does it himself is a strong counter-argument. It's a very strong counter. It's a funny kind of fraud where the person you're defrauding, first of all, is yourself. You know, for it to be fraud, there has to be bad intent. And if you're doing it yourself, it suggests there's deception involved, for sure. But there's self-deception involved. You know, he's hurting others, but first he hurts himself. I don't know that that qualifies as fraud. I tend to think not. Problem two with the idea that there's some kind of fraud here, it has happened before. You know, if this was a one-time event, you could say, well, it's hard to believe that all these people are involved in fraud, but you know, maybe the ethics, you know, kids today, you know, people are no good anymore, you know, this kind of thing. But this has happened over and over again. This happened in the early 1900s. This happened in the 1920s. This happened in the 1960s. It's a repeating pattern. The fact that we never learn our lesson, you know, there are people that swear they will never own stocks. Most of them are dead now, but when I was younger, you know, these people were still around. There's some still around. They're elderly. They're people who lived through the crash of the 30s, and they swore, I will never, I will never, I will never own stocks. You can print out all the stocks for the long run books you want to print out. You can tell me I'll get a 50% return. I will never, I will never, I will never own stocks. Because they were put through the ringer we're being put through today. We're probably in the early stages. Let's hope not. But there's, you know, it's possible. Wait till we're at the end stages and see if you ever want to invest in stocks again. The fact that we do this to ourselves in cycles indicates it's not fraud, it's something in human nature. It's just there's something rotten in human nature, and there is. There is, but that when there's something that's just rotten in human nature, we don't call it fraud. You know, we call it, I don't know, human failing. Human failing. You don't put people up for fraud for something they can't help. Problem three with the fraud argument, these are smart and good people. You know, I mentioned that already, but all of these people I've dealt with, I've had some of them I've had moments of frustration with. But, you know, I'll make a case and it's just clear as clear can be. I'll cite a, you know, I all the time I cite this thing, I cite Rob Arnott. When he was giving a talk and to 200 academic researchers in the investing field, and he said, I'd like to see a show of hands. How many here think the efficient market theory is sound? And nobody raised their hand. And the efficient market theory is the intellectual framework for the passive investing model. And I, in my eyes, that in itself proves the whole case. You don't need to show anything else. Forget the historical data. If 200 academics that work in this field, not one is willing to raise their hand and say, yes, I believe, the model is discredited. That fact alone does it. But, so it's frustrating. I'll point out something like that, you know, to a lot of these people, the experts and the non-experts, and they just won't answer it. They just ignore it. They don't want to hear it. They tune it out. They can't answer it. There is no answer other than saying passive investing is discredited. But something in them says, I can't do that. I can't go down that path. But other than that, other than the frustrations I've experienced, these people are good, smart, gentle, polite, warm, loving, positive, optimistic, hardworking people. All the way to John Graney. You know, John Graney is He's got his quirks for sure. But when I go to the Goon Central board, they bring this up. Oh, you're mean to John, and I'm like, John is my friend, because I had good times with John. We were friends. We used to exchange emails. I advertised at his website. I gave a 5-star review to his Soapbox report. Build a huge discussion board together. And he was equally kind to me. He, like I said, he promoted me, told people to read my stuff. Gave my Soapbox report a 5-star review. So, he's got his edge. Not everybody would agree that he's definitely got an edge. But a lot of these people are just great people. So that sort of counts against the financial fraud argument, no? Problem four. I can't read my notes here. Oh, I was going to say the anger. When I talk about something like the Scott Burns reaction, we had a nice exchange of emails, intelligent, very substantive. But he clearly didn't want to, his anger seemed to be that, it was a strange, it's a strange phenomenon. But the idea seemed, he seemed angry that I was saying that I had discovered these flaws. It was sort of like, Rob Bennett, who are you? Who are you? He said it's the something like it's self-aggrandizement. I'm promoting myself. Who are you, Rob Bennett, to say that you've discovered flaws in the safe withdrawal rate studies? And then he was sort of saying, well, he knew about it. He says, I've known research that showed valuations affect long-term returns going back for decades. And he pointed to some, like that would somehow disprove what I had said. And I was like, well, thanks for the link, Scott. But you're sort of proving my case. You're telling me that you knew these studies, you knew that valuations affect long-term returns. Well, why didn't you do anything about it? Why, you knew decades ago, why were you linking to these studies that don't include an adjustment for valuations? I try to say it without being rude. I try to be polite, but there's almost no polite way to say it. You have to say it. You have to say the fact, and the fact itself is damning. But the fact that he put it the way he put it is a sign that it's not what we usually think of as fraud, because if it were fraud, he wouldn't be pointing out that he knew about this research for 20, 30 years, Why would he do that? It would be against his, if he was trying to trick us, it'd be against his self-interest. I think what's going on there is that all of the people who believe in passive investing essentially have two beliefs. They all have common sense, and their common sense tells them valuations must affect long-term returns. Investors have to lower their stock allocations at times of insane prices. Everybody knows that on some level of consciousness. But then if you believe in passive investing, you believe just the opposite. So you believe two opposite things, and that of course creates inner tension. And what Rob Bennett does that people think is mean is I hold the mirror up and force them to acknowledge that they know these things. I don't say I'm super smart. I'm the only one who knows it. That's idiotic. What I do is I say, no, you're smart. You know it. And that just makes them blow a fuse. Because I'm not saying I know it. I'm saying you know it. And they can't stand it. But that's not an indicator of fraud. Problem five, the fact that so many give answers or include, or describe for us the problem, it shows the lack of a cover-up. The perfect example here is Bill Bernstein. I mentioned how, Bill, when he had a bunch of goons surrounding him at the Vanguard Diehards board, he said, he had a post where he said, I agree with everything Rob said in that last post. And then the goons came in. And then when the goons are around, he said, I have no idea what the safe withdrawal rate is. I have no, I don't, safe withdrawal rate? I don't know, no safe withdrawal rate. He wrote a book on it. He described, he told us what the safe withdrawal rate is in his book, and he doesn't know what it is. But if he really were trying to, trick us. He never would have written that chapter in his book. He never would have calculated the safe withdrawal rate. In other words, what's going on is you have one human being making two totally contradictory claims, that he's calculated the safe withdrawal rate and it's 2%, and that he has no idea what it is. They're totally in contradiction. But it's almost as if he's not aware of the contradiction. He is aware on some level, and that's where the anger comes in. But yet, the phrase is cognitive dissonance. That's what psychologists call it. When you know something, but you can't permit yourself to know it. And so you just engage in behavior that is just otherwise inexplicable. There's an example of this. I'm running out of time, but I can't help but pass this along because it blew my mind. I read an article in the Washington Post years ago, and it was about a girl, you know, a teenage girl, and she was pregnant. She wasn't married. She was living at home. She was young. And her parents were sort of embarrassed to ask her what had happened. She was, you know, she had never told them, and she was showing. And they didn't want to say anything. I don't know. She was 16, 17. I don't know. I think what happened is she ended up, she had the baby, and she killed the baby. She left the baby in a trash can or something at the prom, at the senior prom. So she was probably 17, eight, maybe 18. And the police had to make a decision whether to prosecute the parents for a crime because they knew that this was going on and they did nothing. But they were afraid to confront the girl. And the girl ended up, you know, she was fully pregnant. She had the baby. The parents had to know that there was a baby somewhere, but of course the baby wasn't anywhere to be found because the girl killed the baby. And the police were put in the situation of, you know, do we prosecute? And that's the kind of situation we're dealing with here. It's like, the knowledge is there. You can prove the knowledge. You just, you know, it's all on the internet. You know, we've got hundreds of thousands of posts. You can link to them. We've got a record. We've got post archives. But the intent isn't there. You know, if the parent, you know, how do you explain? It's inexplicable behavior. You almost can't believe it, but yet it happened. So you got to believe it. That's what I think we're dealing with here. We're dealing with that kind of behavior. People cannot accept that passive investing doesn't work. They want it to work in the worst way. They want it to work, and they can't deal with the embarrassment that they've recommended it for 30 years. They've caused so much financial misery, and they can't bear to accept that. So instead of attacking them, we need to forgive them. We need to lighten up. We need to, you know, give them a hug. I mean, you know, I'm saying that half facetiously, but I think it's true. Give them a hug and let them have a cry and then say, look, we want to hear your contributions. We want to work together. We want to move forward. We're not here to make you feel bad. We're not here to attack you, but we do have to be honest. We can't get out of this crisis without honesty. That's job one. We've got to get the numbers right. And you can't get the numbers right without counting valuations, and you can't count valuations and still be a passive investor. Because passive investing, the core idea is you don't change your stock allocation in response to changes in prices. Point number six, humans learn from listening to other humans. That's a reality. You see, when I say that objectively we can show that these people know that passive investing doesn't work, that's true. I can show it with numbers. I can show you with numbers that passive investing cannot work. The entire historical data shows it, going back to 1870. But one of the key findings of the rational investing school, which is the school I advocate, is that human beings are not computers with legs. We don't just go by numbers. We go by what other people tell us. That's how we learn. And today, certainly this has been true, you know, for past decades, but it's true even today. It's starting to change, I hope. Everybody we talk to believes in passive investing. Ask your friends, do you think you can time the market? They're going to say no. As long as that's true, none of us can really understand investing because that's how we learn. And if people are telling us we can't, if too many people are telling us we can't time the market, we can't believe we can. Now, as soon as we get people to stop saying that, then, you know, I can explain why you can time the market. I can do a podcast. I've already done one. you know, market timing, what works and what doesn't. But I can't, nobody can hear those words as long as their friends are telling them they can't time, because humans listen to their friends. Fact. It's the way it is. You don't have to like it. You have to accept it. It's true. So it's not a problem of fraud here. It's a problem of how humans process information. Point number seven, humans listen to experts. That's another thing humans do. Humans put great stock in experts. That's why so much commercials are always quoting experts. You know, they get Tiger Woods to tell you what kind of car to buy. Tiger Woods doesn't know what kind of car to buy any more than I do, but he's an expert. You know, he's a great golfer. He's, you know, he's awesome. And humans care about that. That persuades us. That's how we're made. Well, when John Bogle tells you you can't time the market, you believe it, whether he contradicts himself in the next sentence or not. You know, in the next sentence, he talks about reversion to the mean, which contradicts what he just said, but doesn't matter. Humans listen to experts. And even John Bogle, you know, he's an expert. He listens to other experts. He listens to Bill Bernstein or, you know, whoever it is. He too listens to experts. He listens to Malkiel, maybe. And Malkiel listens to him. But everybody's listening to experts, and the experts are all getting it wrong, and the experts can't bear to acknowledge that they've gotten it wrong for so long now, and they've caused so much pain. Point number eight, the reality of stock cycles. I talked about stock cycles in a recent podcast, but because stocks perform in cycles, stocks, there are essentially two different forms of stocks. There's the stocks you buy during wild bull markets, and there's the stocks you buy during wild bear markets, and they're totally different investment classes. One is this hugely great investment class, and one is this frighteningly bad investment class. What the emotional healthy thing to do is to learn how they both operate. But the human thing to do is to fall into the trap of thinking that whichever one you have experience with is the only investment class there is. So during the time period when there's a wild bull market, every book that comes out and every expert that comes out says, stocks for the long run, buy and hold, stay the course, timing doesn't work. And then when we go into the other cycle, it's doom and gloom. No middle class investor should ever own any stocks. Don't, you know, the death of equities, on and on and on, all just as much gibberish as the other gibberish. We're looking for an emotional healthy middle, but we haven't yet figured out how to do that. I'm hoping that some of the work we've done in the retire early and invest and indexing communities can help us get to that better place, but we're not there yet. Point number nine in the argument, this is not financial fraud. The popularity of books like Irrational Exuberance. If this were fraud, they wouldn't let us read these books, but Irrational Exuberance was a bestseller. Now, they ignored it. They don't incorporate the insights into their investing advice, and they should. Shiller obviously saw all this coming. You know, Shiller should be king today. Shouldn't the guy who got it all right be recognized for what he did? But they still don't incorporate Shiller's insights into the model. They still tell people to buy and hold. But they didn't censor Shiller. They praised him. They all acknowledge Shiller's great and lots of others. So they did that with me. You know, there were people who praised me and then smeared me. But the reason they would give is that they liked it when I was just sort of saying things like Shiller. But what they couldn't take was when I said the studies are analytically invalid. See, that was a line that you're not allowed to cross. I gave data-based responses. I undermined passive investing. Passive investing is built on data. That's how they support it. And I pointed to the data showing that the passive investing claims are false. And it's hard for a passive investing advocate to argue with data because they believe in data. And them seeing that the data shows their claims to be false, that's the nuclear bomb. Shiller never went quite that far. It's arguable. I think he said things that said it, but they just ignored that. You know, they passed over the parts where he said it. He said it like I did, but they pass over it. Whereas I'm on a discussion board and I keep repeating it, and that's what makes them nuts. But it's not a total stonewall. It's a stonewall of the claim that the old school studies are analytically invalid. That's a stonewall. But it's not a stonewall of people who have the Shiller viewpoint. They allow those people. They just don't incorporate. They ignore them. Point number 10, the pain that we're the extent of the pain we're suffering. You know, $16 trillion, $8 trillion if you just look at stocks and what we've seen in the past year. It seems impossible to me that even bad people, let's say all these people were bad, which I don't at all think is the case. If they all were bad, they still wouldn't cause a loss of $8 trillion or $16 trillion. That's just, it's unbelievable. It's truly unbelievable. It's all unbelievable, but that's even more unbelievable than anything else. So I just can't believe it. I have to believe that they just genuinely can't cope with the realities. And a bonus argument for why it's not fraud is I went to law school a long time ago, and I think one of the things that's looked at, one of the factors that's looked at is standard industry practice. Do other people in the industry do this? And in the investing industry, the standard industry practice is to cite the passive investing junk. See, this is a problem. You know, the situation we're in is everybody that gives investing advice is afraid of being sued. You know, how can you not be? We live in a society where lawsuits come at you from every direction, and you're giving people advice on what to do with their retirement money. So what do you do? Well, what you do to protect yourself is you learn what the books say, you learn what the experts say, and then you stick to it. That many people are giving this advice because it's safe. But it's not safe for the people hearing it. It's safe for the people giving it. See, what threw the wrench in all this is the introduction of this new communications medium, the internet. Because in the old days, it just used to be, you know, the experts would talk and the investors would listen, and the investors might ask a question, say at a speech or something. But any expert worth his salt, you know, like a politician, he can give a vague answer to the question and then get off the stage. But on a discussion board, you can't do that. That's what John Graney and Mel Lindauer were up against. Mel Lindauer, you know, his view of the situation is that he just says what Bogle says. I don't think that's quite right, but that's what he thinks. I think Mel genuinely thinks that. But Mel is in a spot because Bogle, he can take questions and you know, he can sort of give a vague answer and then, you know, get off the stage. But Mel, he's there every day at the discussion board. And this Rob Bennett guy, you know, he knows all these facts. He's got all these links. He's done research. He's got studies. He's got calculators. What's Mel supposed to do? He's got no way to get out of it other than, you know, a smear campaign. He's got nothing else. Same thing with Graney. He's got nothing else. Graney tried to warn me. Drop it, Rob. You know, he sent me warnings. And Mel sent me warnings. I just don't listen to the warnings. But not because I'm confrontational, because I don't believe that's the answer. I've believed from the first day that we have to be straight on this stuff. And if the model can't tolerate us being straight, the model should fail. And so, you know, that's where I think it's come to. Now that we've lost, you know, the $16 trillion, I think it's time to acknowledge that the model has failed. But in order to get there, I think we need to drop the anger and all this kind of thing, and we need to respond with love. We need to be firm on the question that we do need straight answers. We need to be accurate when talking about retirement advice or allocation advice. We need to tell people what the historical data says. We need to tell people how investing really works. But then we need to be loving and forgiving and generous, spirited. You know, last couple of points I'd make is this whole idea that, you know, you have to attack. That's a goon way of thinking. It's black and white thinking. You know, goonishness is black and white thinking. That's really what it is. The goons are just like, they're always dogmatic. And so their view would be, if passive investing works across the board, it's perfect, or it's fraud. You know, those are the only two options, totally black or totally white. And what I'm proposing is something in the middle. I'm saying passive investing does not work. It's a failed strategy. But it was well intended. It was based on research. It was rooted in something good. We developed many fantastic insights through the use during the passive investing era. And the key insights, you know, I say 60% of Bogle's stuff is gold. The key insights are going to lay the foundation for the rational investing model. They're going to be with us for many, many years to come. See, that's not black and white thinking. That's, that's Hobbit thinking. You know, that's Frodo. That's, Frodo is this guy, you know, they like, the Hobbits like to drink, they like to eat, they like to smoke, they like to goof around, they like fireworks. But when the chips are down, when they have no choice, you know, but to handle their responsibility, or no choice but to be loyal to their friend, they've got what it takes inside to do that. That's what I'm trying to advocate. That's what I'm advocating, is a healthy emotional approach to investing realities. That we have to be willing to joke around, cite song lyrics, forgive our enemies, work together, be open to the other side, not be dogmatic. But at the same time, we do need to be firm about, look, we're not going to go along with some con on what the historical data says about safe withdrawal rates. That will not fly. That will not fly. We're tough on that issue, and then we're soft on everything else. We need a fresh start. Our goal today, if we get into a situation where our goal becomes, you know, hunt the bad guys and tear them down, then I'll tell you what's going to happen is we're going to topple this economy. That's what I believe. I believe we'll see another 50% price drop. Maybe not this year, probably not for 5 years out. But I think we'll take things to a bad place, and we'll all be sorry. We'll all be sorry. There will be no winners. There will be no winners. There's no one who benefits from another price crash. This past price crash was a good thing. Many people don't see it that way, but it was a good thing because we were at such insane price levels that stocks could never again provide a good long-term return. Now that's not true. Now stocks are priced to provide a good long-term return. And so people can again begin planning for retirement. So we've now paid the debt that we took on in the 1990s with that insane bull market. We should be celebrating, in my view. We should be celebrating. But if we become emotionally negative, we can make it worse, and that benefits no one. There's no good in another price crash. Just it'll topple the economy, and we will all suffer for a long time to come. So I think the road today, the byword is, love is the answer. Love your goon. Find a goon, you know. Every normal, grab a goon and you know, go dancing in the street, okay? That's Frodo's message to all you hobbits out there in podcast land. All right. Anyway, I think I did it. I think I pitched it the way I wanted to pitch it. It was this is probably the hardest podcast I've recorded because it's so delicate. You know, talking about big name experts and whether they've committed financial fraud in circumstances in which there's a lot of evidence they did, and which there's a temptation to go one way or the other. There's a temptation to say, yes, they did commit fraud, which can lead to some very bad stuff, I think. Or there's a temptation to cover it up and say, oh, you know, those old school safe withdrawal rate studies, they're not so bad. They're just a rule of thumb, you know. People can always, if their retirements fail, people can tighten their belts. They can tighten their belts. See, that's the other way. And I don't want to fall either way. I want to play it like Frodo played it. We don't put on the ring and try to use its power to destroy our enemies. the ring of dogmatism. We want to throw the ring of dogmatism into whatever it was called. I don't know what it was called. The pit, you know, where you can destroy it. I want to destroy the ring of dogmatism for all time. Dogmatism in investing. I want to melt that ring down. Take that power, you know, out of Middle Earth. So that the elves and the dwarfs and the hobbits and the men can live in peace again. Good luck with your investing strategies.